Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So some interesting information coming out of Seattle as teachers there and public school workers have authorized a strike that could happen on September 1st, the first day of school in those districts. And, you know, again, it brings back to this, you know, what we saw at the end of last year, the organizing of teachers to stand up, not just for better wages and hours, but for better conditions, but for better opportunities for their students, for better initiatives to stand up for public education, especially when you've got someone like billionaire Betsy running the Department of Education. And here to share some thoughts on what we should be pursuing and what our Secretary of Education should be focused on, I've asked Denisha Jones to come talk with us. She's one of the board of directors with the Badass Teachers Association. Denisha, thanks for taking time for us.
Hi, Rick. Thanks for having me.
So I'm looking at this situation in Seattle, and here we are, you know, more teachers stepping up, speaking out, and you know, ready to defend their profession.
Yeah, it's definitely getting close. I have a couple educator friends who are out there, and they're giving us the update that, you know, negotiations aren't going the way they want, and they're, you know, they're holding firm, and they're prepared, you know, if need be, to strike. We saw it happen in Kentucky, and we saw it happen in Arizona and other places. And, you know, teachers are just, you know, the working conditions of the teacher is the learning condition of your child. You know, you should want better for your child's teacher or for anyone's teacher, you know, because it affects how well they do their job, and we should all want better for them. And it seems like the only thing that works these days is to strike, is to refuse to go to work until, you know, they're willing to engage you on a real level, and not just make, you know, teachers have been promising raises and lower class sizes, but they never get them, you know. But now all of a sudden now we got money to buy guns though, so there's hope, right?
Yeah, I was gonna say that. I mean, you know, billionaire Betsy wants to make sure that all of the teachers are armed and there's a gun on the wall and all of that, and you know, because hey, it's gonna make those kids listen a little bit better.
I mean, teachers go out, spend $300 to $500 out of their pocket just to start the school year and make sure that they have everything they need. But somehow, schools that can't afford a nurse 5 days a week or can't afford a librarian 5 days a week somehow are going to have money for to arm teachers. Like, it makes absolutely no sense. And, you know, I work in higher education, and after the last school shooting, I just said, can you imagine I have to prepare people to become teachers? So how to teach students, how to manage their behavior, how to work with parents, how to do this. And now how to, you know, shoot a gun to protect your students. Like, that's not something that, you know, I can wrap my mind around having to protect them for. And it just seems it's going a little sideways that's the best we can come up with to deal with what's happening.
I mean, as someone who works at the college level, are you guys doing firearms training? I mean, is that part of the curriculum now to become a teacher in this country?
Absolutely not. You know, it's bad enough when we have to go through active shooter training ourselves. I haven't had to do it at my school now, but in my previous school, we did, right? I live in Washington, D.C. You know, it happens. You get, you know, shooters in the area. So that's the kind of, you know, mindset you have to go on and ask what to do if you're, you know, if your classroom is attacked or you're in the office. And so I couldn't imagine then taking it one step level. And it's like, okay, here's how you line up a bunch of first graders, and by the way, here's how you teach them, you know, to not let you accidentally shoot them or something like that.
It's crazy.
A lot of people are really thinking it through, what might go wrong, all the things that might go wrong if teachers are armed, you know.
Well, they have this premise that the good guy with the gun is going to make things right. And without understanding that, you know, even trained professionals in those situations, and we saw this during the Parkland shooting, even they didn't react as you would imagine, or you would fantasize that one would.
Yeah, and you can just imagine when the police show up that they can immediately discern that this guy with a gun is obviously good and this guy with a gun is obviously bad. I think, you know, they're going to shoot first and try to discern that later, because you really don't know when you show up on a chaotic scene like that who's the person with the gun. I mean, and we have an incidence of, you know, people losing their lives for not doing anything wrong, really. And can you imagine just putting a teacher in that position? You know, teachers make a lot of decisions in the day, right? They say, you know, teachers will make a ton. And so imagine having to make a split decision about whether this kid is doing something or not. And you know, the response is that you're armed with a gun and that's how you're responding to a child. I mean, there's just so much that could go wrong. And I don't think people really thought that through. You always think in the hindsight, oh, I'll be heroic. If that was me, I would do all this. But, you know, you don't know how you're going to act. Like we saw in Parkland, that the one guy with a gun couldn't even respond. So it's really sad to think that teachers are going to be able to make that kind of decision and should have to make that kind of decision.
Yeah, and look, I had one teacher explain to me that, you know, they got into the profession because they love kids. And now you're training me to kill one of these people that I love. And he's like, you couldn't do it. Just cannot do it. Or heaven forbid, there's an accident and little Susie gets capped in the front row. How do you tell their parents that? But, you know, I did want to ask you because, you know, we talked about all of the organizing that's been going on. And, you know, what's fascinating to me is it's about more than just wages. It's about more than just benefits. It's about the profession. And this is why I think teachers are so important and so selfless. It's about, you know, rethinking education as a whole and defending public education.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've seen for a long time public education, as well as many other public goods, are under attack, right? The forces of privatization, they see a lot of money to be made. I mean, teachers are not just asking for more pay, they're asking for less standardized tests that take up the entire curriculum and turn children into data points. They're worried about data. They're worried about using programs like Google Classroom and where is all this information going and how is it being stored and who's in charge of it and what happens if it gets breached, right? They're worried about discipline. They don't want to have zero tolerance policies that force children to be suspended, you know, for misbehaving and don't give teachers other options. They want things like restorative justice. They want smaller class size because it improves learning, right? They want authentic assessments and teachers being able to do what we train them to do and not have to rely on standardized curriculum and standardized assessments. So it's a whole mix of things that they're really asking for these days. But in the end, they all benefit making, like you said, making public education better. I mean, public education should change and adapt. The society's changed and adapt. But you got to let the professionals lead that, right? And we're not letting that. We're letting everybody who's not an expert in education come in and kind of lead the revolution. So teachers are trying to take that back. They're trying to say, look, you know, you trust us to educate our child. Trust us and we tell you these are the things that'll make our job a lot better.
I mean, look, Betsy DeVos, who I don't even know that has ever been in a public school, is the one in charge of it. You can't get and maybe this is just me being hyperbolic, but I don't think you can get someone much dumber to lead something that is so important as education.
Not even dumb, but someone who doesn't believe in it. You know, when I first heard her name, when I first heard that she was the one that they were nominating for Secretary of Education, I remember reading an article about the DeVos family and how they really were against the whole idea of public education. And I was like, wow, when you talk about they want to destroy public education, the they was the DeVos family. And here they are being put in charge of public education. So, you know, it's an institution you don't believe in. You don't think society benefited from having public schools. You'd like to see the government out of the public school business. But now you're put in charge of it. So then what happens? And you see, you know, just, you know, a welcome, an open door welcoming to all the things that are threatening the existence of public education, charter schools, which are not doing that great in her home state of Michigan. I mean, let's look at Detroit and let's look at some of those places. They're not really benefiting. Charter schools aren't a solution to the whole issue of fixing education. They work in very small instances where some kids get fortunate and get to go to a really good one. But for the majority of American students, a charter school is not going to solve your problem. It's only going to keep, you know, hyper-segregation and all these other things. So it's these investments in these profitable industries that don't really change anything except they line people's pockets with money. And you know, and her family's willing to capitalize off of that.
Yeah, and I look at, you know, starting on the day after Labor Day, we're going to begin confirming a Supreme Court justice in Brett Kavanaugh, who's all on board with charters. In fact, you can go back to, you know, 1999, 2001. Where he was the co-chair of the Federalist Society's subcommittee on school choice. You can go back to 2000, where he was one of the lawyers who led the constitutional challenge on Florida's voucher law. During the Bush years, he was involved in all of that, you know, and he even made decisions while sitting on the court. So again, you've got someone who's leading the Department of Education who wants to destroy public education, move towards these charters and these vouchers, and you're going to put a Supreme Court justice on the court who is right in line with all of that.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's a very scary outcome in the future if you try and litigate these issues, where we're going to end up. I mean, you know, the idea, it's funny, the idea of charters have been around since Reagan, since, you know, a long time ago, and people have had the idea, but it's for other people's children. Nobody wants charters. Like, they don't push charter schools in these well-funded suburban school districts, right? Like, and I did some research when I was in law school about, if you look at charter schools in the Washington, D.C. area and where they're at, and if you break down the, we have 8 wards that make up the district, and, you know, some are predominantly Black, and some are predominantly white, and some are what I call gentrified kind of mix. You know, all of the charter schools are in the predominantly Black and brown neighborhoods. And then in the gentrified neighborhoods, they're there because the white parents wouldn't send their kids to the local public school. So they create charter schools that are there for them. But in the majority white wards, there are none. Maybe one is about to start, but they don't want them there. So this is a solution not for everyone, not for the politicians, not for the people making these choices, not for Brett Kavanaugh's kids or grandkids or anyone in his family. It's for everybody else's children. And that should tell you something. If your idea is not something that you would put your child and your family through, then why is it good for anybody else?
No, you're right there. And this is why I think it's important for organizations like yours, the Badass Teachers, to get together the more articulate voices, the more articulate radical militant voices, if you will, to stand up and defend this stuff.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at it from all fronts. I mean, the data privacy thing we've been working on, we'll have a toolkit out about that soon. It's such an, just seeing the results of the survey when I got to do some of the research on that, how teachers feel and how school districts are approaching. I mean, it really is just, it's just out there, and it's just out there for the taking, and no one's really thinking about, you know, do we want to live in a world where all this data is collected about our children? And so that's a big issue. Another one we're looking at is, you know, your pension is investing in companies that are supporting, you know, treating immigrants poorly, like building these centers out there where they're housing children, immigrant children. So what is you as a person, as a citizen, as a taxpayer, what right do you have to, you know, to say, I don't know if I want my pension funding these sort of things. So we're looking at those campaigns as well. We're working with organizations like Journey for Justice and the Alliance to Reclaim Our Schools to really look at how, you know, historically, you know, schools are set up to disadvantage some students, and what can we do about that, right? Whether it's a Journey for Justice report, you know, failing Brown versus Board of Education, really looking at how, you know, looking from when that happened in the 60s till now, we haven't really achieved what we were supposed to do in that Supreme Court settlement, and then the continuation of that. And so it's important work, and I think, you know, teachers are there. They're fired up, Rick. They can't take it anymore. I mean, this is their livelihood. They built their life on this, and so they're digging in, and they want to see real change that they can believe in.
Well, I've been waiting for this for years as a union supporter. I've been waiting for our more articulate union members to step forward and carry the torch, because this is going to be fought on intellectual grounds as much as it is boots on the ground.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's still hard. I think one of the things I've learned organizing with teachers, and especially Badass Teachers, in the 5 years we've been around together and through the, you know, 60,000 plus members, is you can't get a lot of teachers to agree on anything. Like, teachers are really diverse in their thinking, and it makes sense. You know, we have a love for teaching children, but that doesn't mean that we agree on everything. But there is a belief that, you know, educators have a voice in this fight. They need to be respected. They have ideas. They know what they're doing. They're professionals. That's something I try and stress to my students all the time. I mean, you are the professional in the room. You've got the knowledge, you've got the training, you've got the experience. You know, you have to come from that position because it's important to see yourself, right? Because otherwise, you know, not everybody else is going to treat you that way. And so that's really important. And I think, you know, when you get past all of the differences, whether you support this or that, at the end of the day, teachers just want to do good work with children and help them turn out to be good people, you know, and that's what we're really striving for. It's just, there's a million different ways to do that, but there are a lot of ways that you really shouldn't do that. So it's going to continue to be an interesting battle, but I have hope. I have hope that the teachers that I see, that I work with, are, you know, they're really unstoppable. They've been fired up. I think, you know, the downside of a Trump presidency is that it does fire up some people in a way that they need to be fired up, you know.
No, I said from the beginning, Inauguration Day, he's going to be the great uniter, and hopefully he unites the country against him. That's been my view. But I look at this, and again, I come back to this idea. You know, I remember when my daughter said she wanted to be a teacher, and I cringed. I can't imagine anyone is getting into this profession after all of the attacks and all of the stuff that's gone on, unless you're really, really passionate about it.
Yeah, I think it's, you know, working in teacher education now for almost 15 years, what I see is there's been that big drop-off, right? It used to be this generational thing. We'd have our first day back. This was really prevalent when I worked at Howard. And the students would come in, and they'd come in with their mothers and their grandmothers. And they'd be sitting there, and the young girl's like, I want to be a teacher. And her mom and grandmother used to be really supportive, and now they're kind of like, no, right? So they don't, they see what the profession has become, and they're not sure they can even encourage their young daughter or granddaughter to go in this profession. But now we've seen a big turn. A lot of the new students I see, you know, they're young. They're out of college. They don't have a lot of options. Teaching has always been that kind of profession where for some people they don't really, and it's not a bad thing. I wanted to teach since I was seven. I mean, not everyone's born that way, making their poor younger sister sit through summer school because that's what you do when you want to be a teacher. But some people come to it later, or they're not even sure they want to do it. They just want a job, and they're willing to try anything. And so we've seen a big shift. But I think the scariest thing is we don't see a lot of teacher prep programs preparing teachers to do it for the long haul. A lot of the changers are like, you can come in and you can teach for 3 years, and then you can go on to and do something with your life. That really scares me.
Teach for America, yeah.
Yeah, we need a profession that's going to say, yeah, you can come to this later in life. You could have done something else. But if you're going to do this, you're going to do this because this is what you want to do, right? We need people who are committed to it. And so that instance is something we need to look at. But there's definitely a big shift, and I don't see as many generational teaching, you know, teachers coming from that. And they come from long line. And that's because the profession is under attack.
And I hope people will check out your website, badassteacher.org. Lots of resources, lots of things there for teachers to get involved, also parents and students to take a look at as well. And Denisha, I appreciate the work you do and the time that you've shared with us and sharing some of your ideas. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Good stuff, Denisha Jones. And look, I hope you check out the website, badassteacher.org. We'll get links out at the RickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back.